Let's go up to our ring announcer.
The following podcast is scheduled for one episode and is our vantage point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast.
Outside, we couldn't see it from our vantage point.
Wrestling fans, and welcome back to our Vantage Point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast. We're glad to be back with you for episode number 37 on this Monday, June 26, 2017. I, of course, am Joe Murata, alongside the man of 1,004 holds, Michael Quinn. How you doing, Quinn?
Howdy doody, and welcome back is right.
Welcome back is right. It is, first of all, it is summer.
Yes.
It's hot.
It is very hot.
You know where it's not hot, though?
In this basement?
Right here in this basement. It's very cool in this basement because our listeners are so cool for listening to us.
Yes, they are.
What do you think of that?
I think it's very cool.
We want to thank you guys, of course, for listening as always, and we're here to talk to you about the world of retro wrestling. Before we get to that, Quinn, let's remind everyone there's some places to find us on the social media, one of which is Twitter. You can talk to us at OVP Podcast, and what can go on there, Quinn?
Well, you can tweet pictures and little messages, and you can argue with the Mount Rushmore and Death Valley GIFs, whatever. We do all the Twittering things. We retweet. We like it.
It's
great. if it's Twitter, we do it.
If it's Twitter, we do it. Speaking of GIFs, I've really been, as always, liking Dean Coles has some great GIFs out there. You can go follow him, folks.
Yeah, well, hot Coles. I mean, he's got the hot GIFs.
And we've got the cool podcast,
yeah.
According to Marcello.
It's a very weather-oriented podcast this week.
Sometimes it's a little hazy.
Yeah.
Sometimes we're a little foggy.
We're a little sunny, too.
Sometimes we blow some hot air.
Yeah. So,
anyway, and of course, you can email us at ovppodcast@gmail.com. That is ovppodcast@gmail.com. We do take emails.
Yes, we do.
We read them.
Yes.
We respond to them.
We do that.
We do everything you should do in an email.
We're generally good emailers.
I think we are. Let us know, folks. You know how you can find out? You can email us and let us know. If you get a response,
right,
we're good emailers.
Yeah. Although, thinking now, I think I have a couple of outstanding emails we need to get to, but... You know, maybe there'll be another forum for that.
Yeah, that's right. We have a website, by the way.
Oh, do we?
Yeah, what is it?
It's called ovppodcast.com.
And there's a lot of cool stuff there. There's like links to everywhere you can find us, basically. It's our home base.
Well, everywhere you look, everywhere you go.
There's a podcast.
There's a podcast, and all that stuff is over at ovppodcast.com.
Including links to the various places you can listen to this podcast. So obviously, there's the SoundCloud feed where we host it, but there's other places, Quinn.
Yeah, there's iTunes or Apple Podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
And over there, you can subscribe so you don't have to look for us every week, or you can leave us a review so other fans know that we exist.
That's right.
And we really appreciate that.
That's right.
So there's always Google Play Music as well.
Mm-hmm.
Stitcher.
Who cares?
What?
Whoa.
Blueberry?
Yeah, Blueberry.
Who cares?
Player.fm.
Player.fm, yes, you got me there.
And Otis Radio or something?
Otto, yeah. I'm forgetting all my places.
Yeah, well, one place that we don't want anyone to forget, of course, is theplacetobenation.com.
Yes.
You can find us there as well, and you can listen to us twice.
Yes.
So go to placetobenation.com. You can check out their other great podcasts, including this one. But they have some good stuff over there. There's the main event, and there's obviously Quinn's personal favorite, The Place to Be podcast with JT and Scott.
Yeah, they talk about all the 1986 happenings in the world of the World Wrestling Federation.
That's right, the World Wrestling Federation.
Yeah, the world of the World Wrestling Federation. Also, you know, there's another good podcast on their pro wrestling only feed, GF Allentown.
GF Allentown, Greetings from Allentown.
Yeah.
Great podcast, actually.
Man.
One man show there.
Yeah.
And he's fantastic at it.
I love him.
So a big shout out to Greetings from Allentown. Go check him out on the Place to Be pro wrestling only feed.
Yes.
So we have also, Quinn, a Facebook group that's really been heating up lately, speaking of the heat.
Yeah, it's a pretty good group where you can talk about all the stuff on our podcast or just retro wrestling things.
Like, in general, yeah.
In general, and some good discussion over there. And all you have to do is go on facebook.com, ask Mark Zuckerberg over there in his little magical search bar, and put in OVP podcast, and we're there.
And there the hell it is.
Yeah.
And one last thing is we have some merchandise available, and you can find the OVT shirt over at Teespring. That's teespring.com/OVP podcast.
I think one day we're going to have to get the OVP book.
What's going to be in the OVP book?
Bob Uecker, of course.
So, folks, obviously, at any time, if you have any suggestions for us, whether it is a deep dive topic, whether it is a Rushmore in Death Valley, whether it's a review. Let us know on any of the aforementioned avenues, and we'll be happy to check it out. We will try, we promise, to get to every single request. In fact, maybe stay tuned of few episodes from now, we might have something in the works to try to get to all your requests.
Yes.
There might be something happening. But the first thing we do is we deep dive, Quinn, and I'm going to get to be the tour guide today, so I'm very excited about that. So let's get our scuba gear on. Excellent. Really good.
Professional podcast.
Very, very professional. Quinn, we were talking last week about the collapse of the Golden Era, if you recall.
Yes.
So I want to build off of that.
Oh, yeah?
Let's talk about the new generation.
The World Wrestling Federation. For over 50 years, the revolutionary force in sports entertainment.
Oh, the new generation. We had a lot to say about them a couple weeks ago also.
Let's get more into detail about that.
Boy,
crap.
That Superstars is leading to quite a bit of discussion on this podcast. Like every week we're talking ever since that crappy Superstars.
Who would have thought some like innocent Superstars from 1994 would lead to all this stuff?
We're like beaten up on it or something. I feel bad.
Well, it was right in the middle of the new generation era, which got started formally after WrestleMania 10, like in earnest.
Yes.
We are witnessing, ladies and gentlemen, a brand new era.
And obviously we know that the new generation is looked back on as probably their worst period in their modern times.
I don't know. I have a different outlook. It's the birth of wrestling for me.
That's also when I started watching.
So I will say this about the new generation era, and I always say this. It's the fact that it's when I started watching. I think that's why to this day I'm probably even doing a wrestling podcast, is because when I watched, it was so shitty, but I didn't know it was shitty, and all I was seeing was it kept getting better every single year
for
a long time.
That's true.
For like 6 years.
It's like when you started watching baseball. The Yankees were shitty.
Right.
Then they just kept getting better.
Yeah, and then when they got shitty again, I was like, what is this?
Same thing with WWE. When they got shitty, you're like, what is this?
Yeah.
But yeah, the new generation, folks, if you haven't followed that at all, it's good that you didn't.
Good for you.
Yeah, really. But basically, after, 92, 93, with Hogan and Warrior and Savage being downplayed and then eventually gone, 94 creeps around and we finally get the torch passed for real to Bret Hart at WrestleMania 10.
Yes.
And that was kind of the kickoff of it. And they started running this new campaign where it was, no more old guys. Of course, in the middle of that is King versus Roddy Piper.
Or Bob Backlund, WWF champion.
Right. But nevertheless, their whole campaign was, this is the new generation.
The World Wrestling Federation. Our athletes still care about their fans.
That's basically a stab over at WCW for scooping up all the old guys.
Yeah.
Like Hogan and Savage.
And apparently there was like a Catholic Church thing, too, because of that promo we saw last week. Priests are watching the new generation. And
strange situation. Yeah. But, the overall thing about the new generation era to me is it just looks cheap and desperate.
Yes, it's awful.
It's like too colorful or something. It's foggy.
Here's the problem.
It's gray, but it's colorful. I can't describe the look of it.
Here's the problem with that look.
Go ahead.
It's that 80s Hogan look applied to like these young guys who look completely out of place. It's like these guys should be cool and badass, but instead they're like neon lights and WBF looking things.
Yeah, and also they were always in like aircraft hangars.
The arenas too.
The crowds were smaller. It was basically the total opposite of the boom in a lot of ways.
Right, but not in the good way.
No, no one cared way.
It was like this new generation was kind of just sitting here, right? And they're twiddling their thumbs, right? And they're waiting for something good to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't really happen until Pillman had a gun.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yes.
But all these guys were just sitting around till then, doing crap.
And it sucks, too, because while you had, some of the faces of the new generation were Diesel as a babyface champion, which was just odd, a misuse of him.
On lives the new generation and the World Wrestling Federation! Yeah!
And we had guys like Bret Hart in the mid-card fighting pirates and dentists and King.
Yeah.
And you had...
And King, yes.
And King. And you had Big Mabel as the King of the Ring and a world champion contender.
Mm-hmm.
Big Daddy Fool, I always knew you were a fool. But I never knew you were stupid.
And then meanwhile, Shawn Michaels in 95 was on the mid-card doing awesome. So you did have good stuff.
Well, that's the thing is your mid-card almost seems stronger than your main event,
right?
First of all. And second of all, it was just like it felt like the guys that were good were just being misused. Like, they weren't being pushed up. Like, so you're just seeing this, like, weird thing going on. It's like this big in the middle, like, why is this not the top stuff?
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like a big, it sticks out like a sore thumb.
There you go. Like, to give you an example, folks, in 1995, some of the main events involve men like Bam Bam Bigelow.
Right.
Right? Because he was in the King of the Ring main event. He main evented against Lawrence Taylor.
And nothing against Bam Bam,
but he's not
new generation material to me.
Tatanka, but heel.
Yeah.
Sid at his worst.
Yep.
Mabel, Diesel, British Bulldog in 95 when it was weird.
Yeah, he had the short hair.
But then in the mid-card, you had guys like Shawn Michaels,
right.
Bret Hart, Razor Ramon, 1-2-3 Kid. Like, good wrestlers. Hakushi.
Yeah.
One of your favorites.
Yeah, Hakushi,
you know?
Very underrated.
Right, you had a lot of good talent there, but it was just in the middle of the pack rather than on top.
I will say this. There were some standouts, like older guys that came back and all of a sudden looked kind of awesome, like Waylon Mercy.
Danny Spivey, yeah.
Yeah, and even, you know who came in the middle of all this? Mm. Mankind was actually an older wrestler, really.
Yeah, and he wandered in 96. And
yeah, in the early part. Yeah, yeah, so he's new generation.
Really helped change things.
Yeah.
He was a part of it.
Why is the sky blue? What happened to my ear? Why am I the way I am? And why are so many people so frightened of me?
But again, there was occasions where the older, you know, veteran guys would come in. But, I mean, for the most part,
you were dealing with shit like Justin Hawk Bradshaw.
Yeah.
Well, let me tell you something. You ain't gonna be singing. You're gonna be squealing like one of them cows has had this braided iron stuck on his booty.
You know, and Rad Radford.
Yes.
Skip. And I like Chris Candido, but just Skip. You know what I mean? Skip and Zip.
It's very misguided, most of it, too. It's like Vince's vision of what young people like to do.
Yeah, which is always funny.
Yeah. I think that was the main problem. And really, the Attitude Era, if you really think about it, it's what young people actually like.
At the time, yeah. It totally was.
Yeah.
You had this old mentality from an aging, you know, not that he was old at the time, but getting older, Vince McMahon.
Right.
Who ruled the roost in the 80s with his formula and stuff like that.
Yep.
Trying to duplicate that or replicate that or recreate that with Diesel as the big, heroic, virtuous champion, fighting off the fat heels and the nasty bad guys of the month. But it didn't work because what the fans were really getting into around that time were the younger underdogs.
Right.
Like Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart, or just cool guys like Razor. He was still cool in 95.
Just edgier characters.
Edgier characters, right.
Yeah, that's ultimately what his fans wanted. All his fans were stalwarts left over from the time when Vince knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
And they were like grown up now. They were kids when they watched Rock and Wrestling and all that.
Yeah. And even in the cases for kids like us that we happen to get into it, even you and I.
Yes.
Who grew up in the wrestling starting in 94, 95. We knew it wasn't that good.
Yes.
Which is amazing.
We knew it was better before because
yes.
We could get our hands on tapes at the rental stores, which is kind of ironic because if you think about it, Vince set that up to make money, but in essence, it showed us that his current product was shit.
Right, exactly.
Like
it exposed it.
Yeah, we got into it and we're like, well, I want to watch more wrestling, so I go to the video store and I get tapes, and they're still, you know, the tapes, the old wrestling now that's the 80s and early 90s,
mm-hmm.
like that was not too old when we were getting into it. So we got to look at it and we're like, oh, this is only a couple years ago. This isn't that bad. And then we watch it and we're like, this is amazing. Why are they not doing this?
Right, exactly. Like when I got into wrestling in 1994, think about this. WrestleMania 6 was only 4 years old.
Right, exactly.
But it seemed like an eternity ago.
Yeah.
Hulk Hogan and Ultimate Warrior?
Right, it didn't seem anything like they were presenting, although the Warrior would come back.
There's going to be squealing. And gold dust, and you're gonna be the biggest squealing pig of all.
Yeah, and that was an attempt by Vince, obviously, in the New Generation era, folks, in 1996, to kind of maybe get more lightning in a bottle recaptured.
Right.
You know, and that didn't work.
Nope.
It's amazing how many things he tried, and I gotta give him credit. I mean, at least he brought the Warrior in.
I gotta say this about this discussion as we're talking about it. If it sounds like we're jumping all over the place, this is like essentially what the New Generation was. It was like, just throw everything out at, like, it's confusing. Like,
it was, and I'm not, my goal here wasn't to do like a chronological history of the New Generation era, more of just like a general, you know, discussion of it. Because what it followed was the boom, and what it preceded was the second boom, you know, the Attitude Era.
Yeah.
It's a very odd era.
Yes,
it is. Sandwiched in between two very high peaks.
And it very abruptly ends.
End of 96, early 97.
Yeah,
things change.
I mean, this is going to sound weird, but the true end is those couple of bad Raws, and then all of a sudden Vince Russo's involved, and no more New Generation.
Like, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We've talked about Russo before, but he was a very big reason. Again, we've always said we don't give him all the credit, and we're not saying he didn't have faults.
Yeah, if you want to see a nice bookend to it, I always say get that Live Wire where Vince is on, and Vince Russo like craps on like Jim Cornette's style of booking and mm-hmm. Vince's style of booking, like mm-hmm. on the air live
yep.
in front of like a call-in crowd.
Yeah.
And like he's just saying like that nobody wants to see this anymore, essentially.
Now, with all this knowledge and all this experience, I have one question and one question only for you, and so does everybody else out there. How can this show be so awful, Mr. McMahon? Look at the production facilities. Look at the people you have working on this staff. How can this show be so awful? Excuse me, people at home, again, this is typical wrestling. Wrestling, is it wrestling? What do you say down there in Kentucky or Tennessee, wherever you come from? Typical wrestling,
say.
Jim
don't
Cornette.
Move to New
this
York
is 1996, Jim Cornette, you hear me? People don't want to hear this anymore,
year.
Okay?
And obviously Vince McMahon gave him free reign to do that at that point, but that showed that Vince McMahon finally got it.
Right.
And so that's why I thought it worked, is you had the great ideas of Vince Russo being filtered through Vince McMahon and whomever else was there.
Yeah. And it was rocky at first. There was a couple of misattempts, I think, like trying to make it edgy for no reason. Like,
yeah, right.
I think of things like the flying nuns. It's like, well, you know, it's nuns, so like we're screwing with that taboo or
something.
That was
stupid.
Like, yeah, but like that's dumb. Like, you know what I mean? But I appreciate like the attempts to, okay, what are our limits here? What can we throw out and it will work?
A notable example of how they started to crawl out of it is Quinn and I watched, not to review, we were just watching it, a Live Wire, the first one of 97 with Jim Ross and Vic Venom, Vince Russo. And if you recall, that was right in the midst of when Shawn Michaels is about to fight Sid, but he was still feuding with Bret Hart.
Yeah.
And they were bitching at each other.
Yeah.
But then Sid was like, fuck both of you. And then Steve Austin was like, fuck all of you. And The Undertaker's like, I want the title now. And Vader's like, no, fuck you.
And that highlights another big transition.
Yes.
In the New Generation era, it was very straightforward, like every feud was kind of in its own bubble.
Right, like Shawn Michaels is going to feud with the British Bulldog because of Diana.
Right, exactly. Right? But what Vince Russo starts to introduce, and what's kind of cool is it uses the threads from the New Generation, right? It would use the history of like, well, a couple months ago, Shawn Michaels fought this guy, or, you know, this happened, or Vader didn't like him, or mm-hmm. whatever the hell. And Vince Russo said, let's just mash it all together. We know they hate each other because it's only happened, like, in the last year.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, he starts mixing and matching, and everyone wants to kill each other, basically.
Right, and that's one of the things that made 1997 so exciting when they crawled out of the New Generation era, was that you really didn't know what was going to happen. There was no clear-cut path anymore.
Yeah, another thing that's interesting is, we remember when we watched that blast-off, is that reaction from Todd seemed very raw, like, almost like how a fan would react. It's like, it's chaos. What's going on? What's going to happen? Like,
right.
And what that is kind of cool about the New Generation era, it's one thing, is that what was left over from all that, those pieces, right, mm-hmm. from it, they were able to cobble together into this edgier product.
Exactly. And that's a great point, Quinn. Even though the New Generation era is not known for its quality, it's not known for being a high point, it is a good thing it happened, because it really allowed the hardcore wrestling fan and the casual alike to truly appreciate the era before it and what was to follow. And I might dare say, without the fall of the golden era and without this kind of valley period, there might not have been a reason for Vince McMahon to ever need to change his ways.
Yeah, we might have still been watching Stand Back and all this other nonsense.
And therefore lead to the Attitude Era.
Yeah.
So I would say, as hard as it can be to watch certain shows from that period of time, the New Generation Era was actually beneficial in the long run. What do you think?
In a weird way, the New Generation Era is almost a slow burn to the Attitude Era.
There you go.
In a weird, weird way, unintentional.
Unintentional.
Completely unintentional, but the fallout from the New Generation Era collapsing is so interesting.
Absolutely.
You know, it's all these guys that were all nice and cheery, and all of a sudden they have to, they're clawing for their spot. They're fighting each other and they don't care. And it's like, I guess all this, they could have done this the whole time, but like they now they're in a situation where they have to.
I think that was well said, Quinn. I mean, it was a period of time, the New Generation era, where not much went on, but the talent that was there and the remnants, like you said, the pieces that were picked up helped form what became one of the greatest periods of time to be a fan.
Yes.
Back after this.
This would have the most good food, a family getting together on Monday night. Only one thing can make this night more perfect. Hey, Antonio, come here.
Is everything all right, Don Cici?
Wonderful as usual. Just one more favor. It's 9 o'clock. Put on Monday Night Raw. I never miss that show.
I can't do that, Don Cici.
You say no to me?
I'm sorry. We don't got a cable TV.
Luigi, quick, get the car.
The new WWF Generation.
What a maneuver! Okay.
It's what the family loves to watch.
Hey, Antonio, where's the cheese?
You're listening to Our Vantage Point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast, the fastest growing weekly episodic retro wrestling audio podcast in the world.
And welcome back, wrestling fans, to Our Vantage Point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast. Glad to be with you for episode number 37 on Monday, June 26, 2017. Quinn, it's time for our beloved segment, Rushmore and Death Valley.
Yes, it is.
This is where we put four of the best of something onto Mount Rushmore and four of the worst go into the desert of Death Valley. And Quinn, you get to pick this week. I'm very excited to see what you pick, because I know we got a lot of fan requests lately for this.
Yes, we did.
So what are we doing?
Well, last week we did the Samoans or the Islanders or whatever. And I thought this was a good suggestion by Jeff Applegate over on the Facebook.
Okay.
And my pick for this week is second generation or multi-generation wrestlers.
All right, that's a good one.
I want to expand it to multi because, you know,
there's a few third.
I think second,
think of a couple.
Yes, that second is too narrow, so we need to expand it. And I also wanted to add one little rule.
Okay.
One person from one family. You can't just, like, line it up with hearts or something.
Samoans. Yeah. whatever. Right? Or snookas.
Yeah.
Okay, I got you. So, all right, well, first of all, thanks, Jeff Applegate on the Facebook for that suggestion. Folks, we will try to get to every single one, we promise. So keep sending your suggestions and keep letting us know your Rushmore and Death Valley.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so I have the pick, right?
Go ahead.
Multi-generation or second generation. Well, The Rock comes to mind.
And then all of a sudden, you're jumping around like a bunch of idiots. Undertaker with his Mickey Mouse tattoos and his 33-pound head.
Of course he does. He always comes to mind when you think of multi. He's the most hyped up multi-generational wrestler ever.
He is. And he was the son, obviously, of Rocky Johnson, who we don't really like. And he was the grandson of Peter Maivia, who we don't really like.
Yeah.
But I can think of another one before I even nominate him.
Sure.
Randy Poffo, a.k.a. Randy Savage.
You young punks today got nothing on the Macho Man Randy Savage and my generation,
You can't, like, even, like, holy shit. Like, it's Randy Savage.
It's Randy Savage. Obviously the son of Angelo Poffo.
Yes.
The brother of Lanny Poffo.
Yes. He is probably one of the greatest of all time, if not the best multi-generational wrestler ever.
Right. Yeah. So before we even mention The Rock, I figure I had to go to him. Do you want a volley, or is your volley just, like, deferred to me with The Rock?
Listen, just put Randy Macho Man Savage in. And there's really, like, I can't, like, argue. He's like the George Washington of this. Like, there's just nothing else to say.
There's,
like,
really no point in further discussing his greatness. We've done it a million times.
Yes.
We love Randy Savage. One of the most iconic, charismatic, beloved, well-remembered, well-regarded wrestlers. He could wrestle. He could brawl. He could work. He can cut a promo. Mm-hmm. He had charisma. Just everything.
Yeah.
The complete deal right there. The real deal. Randy Savage for Mount Rushmore.
And I guess I'm up, right?
Yeah.
The second one that comes to mind that I can't really think of anyone better is really The Rock. I mean, it's The Rock.
It is The Rock.
And I know we talked about him last week, but, you know, like, as far as multi-generational go, it's it, probably, dude, yeah, I mean, other than Randy Savage, he had the most success.
He did have the most success, definitely. Yes. And he could wrestle.
He could wrestle.
And he could talk, obviously.
Well, he was one of the best talkers ever. He's on Randy Savage's level of talking.
And charisma.
Yes.
Yeah. You know what? I can't see how we wouldn't put The Rock on. Hey, yeah. If we cruise through this, fine, because I think the Death Valley will be fun.
Yes.
But if we cruise through this, that's no problem. Yeah, because if you're going to put Savage on, you kind of have to put The Rock on.
Although I think this is going to be one of those cases, again, like we had last week, where there's last week it was The Rock and then there's everyone else. This week it's Randy Savage and The Rock and then everybody else.
What about Bret Hart?
You are going to see that I am the best there is, the best there was, and the best there ever will be.
Well, yeah, that, but you know, I still don't think he meets The Rock. I think The Rock is just in there.
So in other words, no one's knocking The Rock out of this.
Yes.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
I think let's just get it over with. Let's get rid of the formalities here.
I think we should get into the thick of it because now we're going to run into a bunch of people.
Okay, no problem. So The Rock now on Mount Rushmore 2 weeks in a row. Okay, so we've got Savage and The Rock.
This is where it gets interesting.
Well, I said Bret Hart. What else you got?
There's Randy Orton.
There's Bob Orton.
Yeah, there's Bob Orton too.
Junior.
Although I love Bob Orton. I really like Bob Orton Jr., but there's no denying that his son
eclipsed him
not by much, but enough.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Like, I know, I get it. It might seem like a leap and bound between the two because he was like a million times world champion. But
yeah, but it's this era.
It's this era, and he kind of had Bob Orton to kind of get it kickstarted. Yeah. He wouldn't be anybody without him.
Probably not.
Bob Orton did the work.
Yeah, and Randy Orton is, for all of the criticism he's received over the years, a very talented wrestler.
Yes.
And that reputation is Randy Orton. Legend killer. A reputation that I earned.
I'm not saying he's one of the best of all time. He's not.
No.
But he's a very talented wrestler. He's got a good, you know, good overall look about him. Very successful.
Yes. But however, now we only got two spots.
Right.
And there's probably some other guys here.
What about Kurt Hennig?
Right. Kurt Hennig is one that I thought of.
Yeah, the son of Larry the Axe Hennig.
Mr. Perfect.
Mr. Perfect himself.
From top to bottom, everything that I have ever done has been absolutely perfect.
The thing with Perfect, and he could definitely make this, he totally can, but I will say this about him, is that I think he never met his full potential. He never was a world champion.
He never was a world champion, but again, that doesn't make him worse.
But he should have been. That's the thing. Is like
in a different world, maybe, Quinter. In a different,
I mean, he's AWA world champ, right?
He but was, I mean, yeah. Technically a world champion.
I guess I'm not really counting it, but
I don't blame you.
Yeah,
I don't care. That's fine. I don't blame you, but yeah,
Well, there's a reason why.
I'm just thinking between Orton and Perfect, Orton's probably belongs on there more.
Let's throw another one.
Go ahead,
Terry Funk.
Yeah.
Now, Terry Funk is the real freaking deal.
Son of Dory Funk,
the real
senior.
Funking deal.
The real funking deal.
Yeah.
Chainsaw Charlie.
Yeah.
And he, you know what the cool thing about him is? He had two stints, two distinctive stints.
This is
stints.
What I love about Terry Funk.
He was the serious, straight-up old-school wrestler into the 70s and into the early 80s.
And then he gets to the late 80s where he becomes Crazy Terry Funk, which I actually love.
I always associate him with just blood on his face, blood on his shirt, a t-shirt on, you know what I mean? Doing moonsaults and crap in ECW.
He's surprisingly aerial for what he is, too. And that's what I always liked. He was like hard-nosed, but you know, he could flip, he could jump. He was no stranger to the top rope.
And he was an NWA world champion.
Right.
Like, when it really mattered.
In the 70s, when it actually mattered.
When it actually really mattered.
I'll give him this too. He was willing to put over anybody. That's a big deal to me.
He was. You know what? In fact, in his retirement, in quotes, match.
His 700 retirements.
Yeah, but one of his first one in 97, he was working for ECW at the time, and he handpicked Bret Hart to put him over in his retirement match. Isn't that cool of him?
Yeah, that's awesome.
Bret the Hitman Hart gets a heartbreaking victory here in Amarillo, Texas. But what a hard-fought battle by Terry Funk.
Bret Hart, heel Canada Bret Hart, like he was in the middle of that.
Yeah.
they bring him in for this ECW show.
I did. Is that on the network?
I don't know if it is.
I've never seen that.
It is a decent match, but Bret Hart beats Terry Funk in his, you know, not really his retirement match, but, you know, we thought it was. So Funk, is a great contender, but here's another one, Quinn.
Sure.
Ted DiBiase is actually second gen.
Yeah, he falls in there because...
Mike DiBiase, right?
Yeah, Mike DiBiase. Yep. He was adopted.
He was adopted.
Yeah.
I've told you this before,
right? Yeah, you've told me this, yeah.
You didn't know that until recently.
No.
Yeah, so he is actually the son of Iron Mike DiBiase.
Yeah.
But adopted, but that counts, obviously.
He's in there.
He's in there. So DiBiase's good, but I don't know. I think Funk might be better
Funk
than...
Funk is crazy good.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
He really is.
Let's just throw in a couple before Dustin Rhodes.
Yeah, of course. Right, Dustin.
Oldest,
yeah, definitely.
Or regular Dustin.
Or regular Dustin, yeah. And Cody, technically.
Yeah, Cody. Cody still has a lot to prove, and he's kind of doing his thing in Japan right now, so I'll let his career
keep going. He's like our age.
Yeah, exactly. He's got a lot more to go.
Yeah, true.
Before he meets the Dustin level of greatness. Because Dustin, what I like about him is he can play a goofy guy, like when Goldust got electrocuted, that thing. He can play like a serious thing, like when Marlena was kind of getting attacked or whatever, and, you know, that's my wife, like, you know.
He could cut a good promo, too.
He could do a hardcore thing when on the back of the truck against Barry Darso.
You had to bring that up again.
It's so good.
Didn't we talk about that recently?
Yeah, we did.
I love it.
I love that match. I love that he was willing to fight on the back of a moving vehicle. That guy didn't give a shit, the way. Dustin Rhodes also, like, for a lot of these multi-generational guys, they're like silver spoon, like everything just gets, as far as wrestling is concerned, everything just gets handed to them. That guy would do whatever the fuck.
That's true.
Kind of like Funk.
True.
Yeah, like,
but I'd have to say, Quinn... Oh, let me do it in this voice. You know, I have to say, if you talk about the second generation wrestling, we got to put Bret Hart.
Yeah.
Above all these guys, he should be the number three.
Yeah, I mean, definitely the most success, probably the best wrestler of all these guys.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're talking Savage, if you're talking The Rock, to me, the next logical guy to put on there is Bret Hart.
Sure.
The best Hart.
Yeah.
I mean, I loved Owen and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Or as Bret Hart would say, I love you, Owen.
Yeah.
And, but Bret's better.
Go ahead.
All right. Let's just get Bret Hart on there, and then we can duke it out for the fourth spot.
It's going to be busy down
there. It's a battle royal, basically. Yeah. All right. So, Bret Hart for number three. So Donnie doesn't get mad at us.
Mm-hmm.
We have The Rock!
Yeah.
Randy Savage and Bret Hart. That's our three. We need one more. We've got floating around Kurt Hennig, Terry Funk, Ted DiBiase,
Dustin.
Randy Orton. Yeah.
Dustin. What about Dory Funk?
Junior. Yeah.
I mean,
he's a wrestler's wrestler, right?
Yeah, he's more technical.
Not as notable.
He would make some appearances with, what's his head? His brother.
Terry.
Yes.
Yeah, but he's not as notable as Terry Funk. I would say that Dory's probably the better wrestler, if you care about wrestling.
Yeah, but Terry's better everything.
The better Funk.
Okay, I just wanted to clear that up so we covered him.
Right, but you know who else now?
What?
Is second gen Tully Blanchard.
I was gonna bring him up because
Joe Blanchard was
Tully Blanchard. Right. Oh my goodness, I love Tully Blanchard.
You really like him a lot,
I like the character where he's arrogant and all that. I like that he's hard-nosed and he's willing to, you know, duke it out in that like cage match with Magnum.
Sure.
I like that he was in the Four Horsemen. That it adds to his like greatness.
Excuse me, Mr. Jim Crockett is out here. Mr. Crockett?
What, do you got another check to cancel or something?
And I also like his little-known ECW feud with Shane Douglas.
Yeah.
And one of the first guys, along with Terry Funk, to acknowledge, I'm older.
Yeah, I'm old.
I haven't done this in a while, but I'm good for one more fight. Like, you know, like, he kind of, he went the spectrum, really. He went, you know, from young to old. Did it all.
Didn't they have a 1 hour time limit draw or something?
I believe so, in like Florida or something.
Or a 90 minute time limit or something ridiculous.
Something ridiculous.
Right? Yeah. Blanchard is good. He's kind of like the Sears version of Ric Flair.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I mean, it's in a good way, though, I feel.
It is.
Like, it's like the mid card version, but he was awesome. He really was.
He was. Oh, man, we got a lot. It's crowded down there.
Who do we got now? What do we got? We got Mr. Perfect and Tully Blanchard and
Goldust.
Terry Funk and Goldust.
Randy Orton, though.
Randy Orton. I still would put Terry Funk above him. I'm really, like, going Funk hard right now. What about the Rougeaus?
Who cares?
I know, but I mean,
they're not like the worst or the best. Jacques Rougeau Sr. folks was, you know, the dad of them. I don't.
What about Carrie Von Erich?
Yeah. Son of Fritz.
This gets very complicated at the bottom.
It does. Well, if you're talking Carrie, though, wasn't David even better?
You say that, but Carrie had the six. Like, seriously, Carrie made it to the big time.
Carrie,
like,
never towed the company line.
Yeah, he was missing something.
Yeah, he never turned heel.
Yeah. Okay, enough.
He didn't have a leg to stand on, Quinn.
To his credit,
yes,
he was a world champion. What? And wait. Fine. He also was an Intercontinental champion. That's something.
Who cares?
Stop.
All I'm saying is he only won the world title because didn't his brother die?
I know. And it so was like a sympathy thing. Yeah. Blah, blah, blah.
And then the Intercontinental thing was only because Brutus Buffcake broke his face, remember?
Yeah. So and also that he was going to commit suicide.
Stop. That's not true.
Are you sure?
You need to not say that.
I don't know.
Quinn.
Will you stop?
Don't make
I'm
me use
so
the,
out of hand
don't
right
make
now.
Me use the soundboard.
I feel like we're forgetting somebody.
Oh, Barry Windham.
Barry Windham. That's
he's actually
that's
second
who, gen. Yeah, that's actually, again, who I was thinking
of. Yeah, because he's the son of Blackjack Mulligan.
Yes.
Yeah, Barry, but come on.
I know, Terry Funk.
But Orton.
No, but Terry Funk.
Kurt Hennig.
You can't, no, Terry Funk. Like, I'm sorry.
Just tell me why.
Because he did it all. He was the world champion.
Okay.
And when it mattered.
Yes, in the early 70s.
He was a great technical wrestler.
Yes, he was.
He was a great brawler. He was able to completely change his character. 100%, which is a rarity.
True.
Like, there's not many people who can say that. Maybe Hulk Hogan.
Hulk Hogan, yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know what? Yeah. You
like,
know, Quinn?
He completely changed his character. He put a bunch of people over.
Yes.
He helped put a little promotion called ECW on the map.
Exactly. And if it wasn't for that, then Vince wouldn't even had anything to copy to do the Attitude Era.
Yeah.
So because of Terry Funk's influence, ECW was able to be what it was.
Yeah. Terry Funk's part of the story when it comes to ECW. He was the only reputable veteran that was willing to go there.
Okay.
Yeah,
I'm good. I'm good
and
on Terry
great,
Funk.
He had that great feud with Ric Flair in '89. Like,
yes.
I mean, come on, like, it's Terry Funk.
He was also Chainsaw Charlie.
Yeah, but I mean, that was long past.
I know, Quinn.
Yeah, that was just to hide him anyway.
No, he really did. Yeah, he really did do a lot for ECW too. Mm-hmm. On those merits, he was a big deal. And his whole run from, you know, whenever the hell he started, early 70s, late 60s, I think.
Yeah.
Until the late
97.
90s. Yeah, but he even came back a
lot,
I think,
you
know?
He even wrestled in the 2000s, I want to say.
He was in the Old Age Outlaws or something in WCW in 2000.
Yep.
Yeah, Terry Funk. Okay, he's second gen. He qualifies. Let us put him in. So there you have it, folks. That is our Mount Rushmore of second gen wrestlers. We've got Randy Savage, The Rock, Bret Hart, and Terry Funk. And we want to know yours. So, Quinn, you have the honor right now of choosing one of the worst.
Well, the first one I think of
is
David Sammartino.
Oh, wow. David Sammartino.
Supposedly the son of the living legend, David Sammartino.
First of all, what I really want to ask you is what makes you think that you're good enough to come to the WWF when I ain't ever heard you in the minor leagues? Here you are in the big leagues. Who do you think you are that you're just going to come out here and ride on daddy's name, man?
What
Son
do you think
of Bruno,
of him?
He was pretty crappy.
Oh, he was junk, all right.
He was bad.
Well, also, he's just such a weird character. Like, he first comes in and he's all bloated up.
Yeah,
and
in 85.
In 85, and he gets to be on WrestleMania.
What the hell with that, by the way?
Well, because
he's Beefcake?
Yes. Because he's Bruno's son, basically. That's the only reason he was ever anything.
You know why Bruno liked him? Good condition.
Well, here's the thing with him is that that's what he got mad about and, like, quit wrestling.
Yes, I know.
Because, like, literally, he couldn't do anything.
Too much Icapro.
Yeah. No, well, he couldn't do anything because of also the shadow of Bruno. That's the ultimate, like, the shadow killing the wrestler.
Yeah, you know, and he was pretty bad. He wasn't a very talented wrestler.
No, but I mean, if he wasn't David Sammartino, could he have developed into anything? I mean, you don't know because you don't have the opportunity.
Yeah, I don't think he would have.
And then he weirdly comes to, like, WCW, like, in the Nitro era, and he's, like, all skinny but ripped.
And he was also in UWF, remember?
Yeah.
That was weird. But you know what who's probably worse than him?
Who?
Eric Watts.
And then all of a sudden, hey, man, want you to work a loop with Eric Watts. And then all of a sudden, hey, man, who wants you to put the kid over? You really want me to put him over? Yep. And Grizzly Smith was giving me these instructions. I said, Grizz, I ain't doing it. I don't see myself getting beat by Eric Watts.
Eric Watts.
Son. He was really bad. He had this horrible run in WCW when Bill Watts was booking, you know, like 92. He threw an infamously like 1 foot off the ground drop kick. You know what I mean? Like one of the worst drop kicks ever. Not only that, Quinn, he was in Techno Team 2000.
Oh, yes, he was. Oh, my goodness. I forgot about that.
I don't know if he was Travis or Troy. I can't remember which. But
see, I just forgot it was him because I thought they came from the future. And Eric Watts definitely wasn't a future forward wrestler. He was a shitty wrestler.
He was a very... He's worse than David, I would have to say, honestly.
Far side. Didn't get all of that drop kick.
And I have another one for you while I'm on a roll here.
What?
Greg Gagne sucked, too.
I was going to ask you. I was actually going to bring him up, too.
The whole deal with like him being this, like, I'm in the high flyers with Jim Brunzell and all this TV title AWA bullshit. Fuck him. He sucked.
Yeah,
he sucked.
I wouldn't say he's as bad as Eric Watts. And there might be worse.
He's not worse than Eric Watts, that's for sure.
Yeah.
You got another one for me?
David Flair.
Yeah, but I look at him as like a low-rent Shane McMahon in a way.
Kind of
accomplished what he was supposed to accomplish.
Yeah, but I always felt David wanted to be more than that.
Well, like, he was never going
to
be.
No, but I mean, like, I saw the aim. It seemed like they tried to expand that character into more than it was. Like, the aim was to be eventually, like, Ric Flair Jr., basically.
Fair enough, Quinn, but like, at the same time, Shane was at WrestleMania last year against The Undertaker.
Well, would you put Shane on Death Valley?
No, I wouldn't.
Yeah, because Shane did the David Flair thing better.
He did. But I don't think David is bad enough or didn't wrestle enough to be considered amongst the likes of Eric Watts.
What about Big Show?
Gagne. Big Show.
He's Andre's son. He didn't meet the Andre standard, and that's a tall standard.
Yeah, literally.
Yeah, he was in a diaper. No. Big Show, not really. I'm sorry. I had to put that out there.
It's not real.
Yeah.
Okay, I have one for you.
Sure.
Natty Neidhart.
She's horrible.
She is horrible.
Now, it's controversial because a lot of people say, well, she's a really good women's wrestler.
She's not.
Well, here's the problem with Natty is she harps on being multi-generational more than anyone I've ever seen.
Like, yeah, she does.
Like, it's so obnoxious. And not to mention, she thinks she's Brett's daughter and not Jim Neidhart's daughter. Like, she won't admit it.
No, I get what you mean by that.
Yeah.
My dad, Brett. She doesn't actually say that, but she might as well.
Yeah, she acts like it.
Probably sent him a Father's Day card last week, you know?
Yeah, probably.
Here's the thing with Natty. She would not be at the level she's been at and have the sustained career she did if she wasn't the daughter of Jim Neidhart. She is not that good.
Is she worse than Charlotte?
Yes.
Because I think Charlotte's a bit overrated, but I don't think she's Death Valley.
I think Natty's worse. I think Natty, as a personality, is obnoxious.
Yeah.
She is obnoxious.
But does that mean... Like, her wrestling ability is okay.
I just don't like her, but okay.
What about Tamina?
Yeah. All right, well, if we're talking that direction...
I mean, Tamina just trumps her.
So she's a snooka, right?
Yeah.
We have one family member allowed. So is Tamina worse than Sim Snooka?
That's tough.
That's the only thing, right?
Yeah.
We've also got Sim Snooka.
We got Sim Snooka and Manu and all.
Yeah, we only get one from the Samoan family, right?
Yeah.
It'd have to be Manu. If we're going to put any of them on.
I feel like this is going to be like Islander City. So Manu would be the Anohi, I guess. Is that where he's
he
from?
He is an Anawai, yes.
Yeah.
But that's also the Fatu. It's all the same fucking family. The Samoans are one family in this regard, okay?
Okay, just the Samoans. But it's the Snookas are different, right?
Yeah, they're not related.
Okay, that's fair.
So the Snookas qualify. But how about this?
What?
How about Brian Christopher? Lawler.
The King's son, huh?
He sucks.
I'm coming to town. I'm coming to Ritchie County High School.
He had his moment, though.
What moment?
What about... Wait, in the same vein, because I really don't think he, like... There's much worse. What about all those, like, Armstrong people? Like, I can't even tell you there's, like, seven of
them. There's Scott Armstrong, there's Steve Armstrong.
There's the Road Dog, but then there's, like, the other ones that would just job on WCW all the time.
Yeah, none of them I don't think would qualify. Brad Armstrong. Brad Armstrong's actually pretty good.
Yeah.
Nah, they're inoffensive enough. Here's a guy I'd love to put on, but I don't think we can.
Who?
Jeff Jarrett.
I would put him on. He's so bad.
He is really bad.
Oh, but he, you know what? His dad, I don't ever think was a wrestler. Wasn't he only a promoter? Does that count?
No, like, it doesn't count, right? You have to be a second gen wrestler from a person that was a wrestler.
I mean, because we put Shane in, but then again, Vince wrestled. So we didn't put Shane in, but I'm saying we discussed him.
True. Mm. Jarrett can't qualify. We're talking about Eric Watts. We're talking about David San Martino.
I think Eric Watts should be the first.
Yeah, you know what? We're dumb if we don't put him on. Eric Watts for Death Valley. If you don't know who that is, folks, check him out. He's bland. He looks terrible. He has the physique of, like, Michael Richards from Seinfeld, you know, Kramer. Like, he just looks like shit.
Yeah, well, I was a different man then.
With a different body.
Yeah.
He did not have any business being on Team WCW. He just looked like crap. You know who we forgot from Mount Rushmore while I'm at it? But I don't think I'd put him above anyone that was in there.
Sure.
Rey Mysterio Jr.
Yeah, he's not.
Yeah.
I mean, he wouldn't have made it, but he's not that bad either.
No, obviously.
I mean, but we've had our problems with him in the past.
Yo, Holmes.
I was number 30 in the Rumble with Daniel Bryan.
That really soured you on him forever, didn't it?
I hate him.
Not even his fault, too.
Yeah, it's not even his fault, but I just can't stand him.
All right, back to the Death Valley. We got Eric Watts. I'm still kind of, you know, in tune here with Greg Gagne being on, honestly.
Yeah.
I thought he sucked.
Yeah.
What business did he have having that kind of a run?
He's Vern's son, but
That's it.
To be honest with you, he's not horrible. He's not Manu or Snuka or...
Okay, right.
Even David San Martino. David San Martino's really bad.
Yeah, you're right.
And David Flair. Oh my goodness, there's so
David
many.
Flair.
Yeah,
but I'm not sure about Flair. How about this? Bruce Hart. He sucks.
You're going to go there. I mean...
I'm going to go there.
He didn't ever do anything that people saw. Like, if anything, the firefighter is worse.
Was he a firefighter?
Keith or whatever?
Keith was the firefighter.
One with the mustache and he had the chicken legs.
Keith was good.
Eh.
Keith Hart is great. Don't you ever make fun of Keith Hart on this show ever again.
Well, he's great if you read the Bret Hart book, but like if you ever saw him wrestle, you'd be like, okay.
What about Ted DiBiase Jr.?
Yes, he's bad.
He was bad, right? And they tried to make him good and he sucked.
Yeah.
Thanks, Dad. You know, ever since I was a kid, I wanted to become a champion.
He's pretty awful. I would say he at least had a run. That's why I keep elevating in my brain David San Martino. Because like...
You want to just put him on and we'll fight it out?
Because he's like very like... It's bad. Okay. Like, he's the definition of, like, bad second generation.
He's the definition of being touted as a second gen and completely falling on your face, flopping, sucking, not being talented, not having any right.
And quickly, too.
And quickly.
Yeah.
All right, let's put David San Martino on. All right, so I have another one for you.
Okay. Wow, you're really... plowing them out here.
Well, I mean, but do you have one? You can go. If you have one, go ahead.
No, but I did want to bring up this guy before we go to, you know who we didn't bring up? Greg Valentine. He wouldn't fall under the bad, but...
No, he wouldn't fall under the bad or the best either.
I just wanted to get him out there.
Yeah, good point. Like, Greg Valentine, son of Johnny Valentine.
Yeah, exactly.
Very good point. I forgot about him.
You could make your arguments for bad, like when he was like Honky Tonk Man Stooge or whatever, but his good stuff outdoes his bad stuff, so...
I agree. What about Joe Hennig?
Joe Hennig.
Curtis Axel.
Oh, yeah! Oh my goodness, he was bad.
Right.
Holy crap.
Another guy that should have been good.
However, I don't think, again, Manu. Like,
D.H. Smith.
No. Wasn't that bad.
Harry Smith, no?
No.
Okay. Manu.
And yeah, he was also with TJ or whatever.
TJ!
And TJ wants to be second generational, but he isn't.
Yeah, what is that?
He's like fake second generational.
Yeah, that's true.
He's just somebody's generation, but not a wrestler.
Manu.
Yeah.
Tamina again. Really, we're really reliving this from last week.
Yeah, I don't know who else to say because they're really bad.
Manu.
Yeah.
Shit, he's bad.
Was Rugged Ronnie Garvin anyone's kid?
Well, I mean, someone's kid, but I don't think his parents were wrestlers.
Okay, yeah, I just didn't know if there was like, because there was also Jimmy Garvin and all that, and
yeah,
I didn't
know.
They're
not all related.
No, but I didn't know. Fake. I know they weren't related, but I didn't know if there was some like family that was like, why was that name reused?
Someone was a real Garvin at some point, I think, but it wasn't Ronnie Garvin.
Was Ollie Anderson someone's kid?
No.
Okay.
He wasn't even an Anderson.
Who was the original Anderson?
Gene Anderson.
That's who I'm thinking of. Okay, yeah.
But there's no actual Andersons. Well, Gene Anderson had a son, remember? Right. We saw him on NAWA or UWF, I think. Yeah, I think
so. Oh, what about that Chief J Strongbow baby, whatever his name was?
Jay Jr.
Jay
yeah.
He was shitty.
God, he was bad, but he's not worse than Manu.
Yeah.
We liked him, actually. What are we talking about?
Yeah,
we didn't mind him.
Well, we thought he was Chief J Strongbow.
You know, yeah. You know who was a wrestler for a while? I don't think he'd qualify, but the Little Dragon, Ricky Steamboat Jr., was a wrestler.
Yeah, but he never made it.
Because he sucks so bad.
Yeah. We were talking about those Armstrongs, but Road Dogg you wouldn't put in.
No way.
Yeah. Okay.
I wouldn't put any of the Armstrongs in.
Okay.
Honestly, they're not offensive enough, I don't think. Now, is Teddy Hart a real Hart?
Teddy Hart sucks.
He is a Hart, right?
Yeah, he's like one of the daughter's
right.
kids. Like, he's not, his last name isn't Hart, but he's a Hart.
But he's technically, does that make him second gen, though? If
yes.
his parents weren't wrestlers. You know what I mean?
Well, his grandfather,
his grandfather was.
So
yeah.
He's multi-gen.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Talking to my girl. She's got a couple other girls meeting me at the hotel. They want to see how my pink pants. You guys know the man in the pink. You guys better understand. Ted Hart went to the WWE. I did my job for once. I think I kissed enough ass.
Teddy Hart is really bad. Remember the thing when he did all the moonsaults and then he threw up or something?
He's just a really shitty wrestler. And he didn't really last long. I think he's already like burnt because I think he did drugs or something. I don't know what happened to him, but he disappeared off the map.
Oh, God. Teddy Hart.
It's sad that we'd have to consider a Hart.
Yeah, but it's Teddy.
Yeah.
I mean, I was talking about Natty.
Well,
Bruce.
Is Teddy worse than Natty? Yes, he is.
Yes, he is.
Yeah.
But is Teddy worse than Manu or Sim?
Just put Manu.
Manu.
Come on.
He is really bad.
Joe, he just put him in. Number three. Just get him in there.
All right, fine. Manu making another appearance.
Two weeks.
How does that happen, by the way?
Well.
All right, Manu, let's put him in. Manu again.
Yeah, Manu.
I didn't think we'd ever be talking about him again after last week, but lo and behold, thanks Jeff Applegate.
Yeah.
Now we're talking about Manu again.
Well, that brings up another one who's would definitely make it.
Yeah.
Sim Snuka. Because
yeah, but between him and Tamina from the Snuka family there, who do we choose?
I think Sim most definitely.
I think he's somehow worse.
Yeah, he's worse. I think you had something with Brian Christopher there. That we didn't explore.
What do you want to say about him? Yeah, I'm fine with that. I don't like him at all.
I guess here's my problem with putting him on it.
Yeah.
Is that he did have like some success, unlike Sim Snuka. Well, Sim Snuka just had about the same exact success because he was a tag champ also.
Uh-huh. He was Deuce.
Yeah. He was the Deuce.
He was the Deuce. Brian Christopher, if it wasn't for the fact that he was able to luck into Too Cool.
Yeah.
And which, by the way, was only really over because Fat Rikishi's ass.
Yeah. Well, what about Fat Rikishi? I mean, I don't think he's worse than any of these people.
We can't put another Samoan in, though.
Oh, wait. We put Manu.
Manu.
I apologize.
Now, again, though, he is from the Fatu family. And I know I said earlier.
No. Enough of that.
All right. Brian Christopher, Quinn.
Yeah, Brian Christopher.
Did you ever like him for what he was?
Well, I did like the Too Cool version, actually.
But why?
It's because he was fun, that's all.
Oh, good. He was fun, slightly.
Sim Snuka was nothing. He was nothing, Joe. He was crappy.
So not only do we have to relive Manu again.
Yeah.
We have to relive Deuce.
Yeah, but they're now associated with, the San Martino baby and...
Eric Watts.
Eric Watts. Yeah, so there you go.
Is this really the road we're taking here?
Who else is worse? Honestly. Ray Rougeau.
No, like, he's great. What?
I mean, he's not the good one of the two. Let's put it that way.
Do you just not like the way he talks?
See, the thing is, I was always a loyal guy. You saw, like I said, I turned down offers to go against Vince because Vince gave me a hell of a break.
He just...
I talk with this French accent.
And he was
and
a bad commentator. He was a bad everything. Like, he was the worst member of the team.
Yeah, but he wasn't that bad.
And Jean-Pierre Lafitte wasn't related to anyone, right?
No, he was great.
Yeah.
He was awesome. No, yeah. Pierre's fine.
Okay.
I have no problem with Pierre.
Okay.
Too bad we can't freaking put Rikishi in there. That was a good one.
Yeah, but Rikishi is too...
I know.
It is too much success.
I get it. Joe Hennig? No.
No.
Not bad enough.
Not bad enough.
Little Dragon? Not bad enough.
Little Dragon's nothing. There's just nothing.
Natty.
Natty.
Teddy.
Not as bad as Sim.
Yeah. Sim.
Yeah.
Oh, we're really coming down to Sim Snuka. I mean, I'm not opposed to say it,
but I mean, I don't think Greg Gagne's that bad compared to Sim Snuka.
True.
I mean, who is worse?
You know, I mean, really, any women? Tessa Blanchard's really good.
She's good. And Charlotte's fine. Lacey
Von Erich.
Ooh, Lacey Von Erich.
I'm third generation. Granddad was a wrestler. My dad was Carrie Von Erich, so.
She is no good. She might be worse than Sim.
Is she worse than Tamina?
Yes.
Well, she might be worse than Sim also.
All she had was that TNA run, and I don't think she would barely wrestle, and she was just shitty.
Right.
She's a bit dainty.
There's a little daint.
Yeah. Yeah. Lacey.
We just took a wild turn here. Lacey, huh?
Lacey Von Erich. How are you feeling about that?
I think I'm okay with putting her on. Now, folks, again, one last reminder. If we miss people, just let us know and put your Mount Rushmore and Death Valley together. We want to hear yours. Yeah. We want to know who we missed.
So, just to recap Lacey, she was just a female wrestler in TNA who never really did anything.
And she was Kerry's daughter.
She was Kerry's daughter. And you wouldn't put the genius in?
He's fine. Lanny Poffo's fine. Lacey Von Erich.
Even, like, when they used her, like, they brought her into the beautiful people, and she was, like, the crappy one.
With
like,
Cute Kip?
And they tried to make her the leader, I think, of it.
Yeah,
later.
Didn't they?
Not Cute Kip was gone by that point.
Cute Kip.
Yeah.
That's all I remember from the beautiful people was Cute Kip.
Her finisher was the claw.
Oh, she's in. Yeah. Based on that alone. Okay. Death Valley, Lacey Von Erich. Well, there you go.
Yep.
We have completed our Mount Rushmore and Death Valley of second-generational or multi-generational wrestlers. Big thank you to Jeff Applegate on Facebook.
Thank you, Jeff.
For giving us that suggestion. And folks, we want to get your suggestions. Let us know. We really, truly will do the best that we can to get to every single suggestion that we receive. In the meantime, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're reviewing something. Back after this.
If you're not getting Pro Wrestling Illustrated magazines, you're missing out on plenty of action and excitement from the entire wrestling world. Each month, Pro Wrestling Illustrated brings you 73 power-packed pages of match coverage, interviews, special features, exclusive ratings, and the famous Pro Wrestling Illustrated full-color centerfold. During this LPWA boutique special offer, receive a full year of Pro Wrestling Illustrated magazine 12 big issues for the low, low price of just $19.95. That's 30% off the newsstand price. You'll enjoy year-round news of the LPWA along with all the latest from pro wrestling around the world. And now you can get 12 big issues for just $19.95. Here's how to order.
Don't call them the Aftermags.
Hey, it's Sean Mooney. I may no longer be in the event center, but if I was, I'd be talking about our Vantage Point Retro Wrestling Podcast. All right, boys, let's get to it.
And welcome back, wrestling fans, to our Vantage Point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast. Quinn, it's time for our final segment, and we are reviewing something.
Yes, we are.
Now, this was good because last week we took this trip to England, sailed over there, you know?
Yeah.
And it was nice to get back into our comfort zone, although we loved that show last week, World of Sports.
I thought
wrestling.
It was great.
It was great. It was
fantastic really little was. Show, surprisingly.
Now, this is much more in our comfort zone, but this is not something that Quinn and I had ever seen. In fact, like the actual, not the episode, the actual syndicated show itself, Quinn and I had never seen.
Right.
And this is WCW Power Hour from June 22nd, 1990. Now, two things. First of all, it was actually a multi-requested show here from Mark Riley, and we finally got to it. We didn't forget you. Promise, he wanted us to do a Power Hour from 89 or 90, so here you go.
We never forget.
We never forget. We just, you know, it takes time. We got to get to things.
Yeah.
But what was Power Hour? So this was on the lower tier of their syndicated shows. Well, actually, this wasn't syndicated. This is on TBS. But they had going on, you know, Pro, Worldwide, Saturday Night, Main Event.
And then later they had Prime. Is this more on Prime's tier?
Yeah, it's probably more on Prime's tier. Okay. Exactly. And this show ran, Quinn, from 89, so we're early in the run here, until 1994.
Whoa.
Yes, who was watching it in 94?
I didn't even know it was on that late.
I didn't either. I had to look that up just out of curiosity.
The Power Hour.
So we're a very powerful hour.
It's a very powerful hour.
So we start here with a very good song in the intro. You really liked it.
Yeah, it felt like Sega Genesis or something. Like all WCW, I always say this, any music that WCW picks out, it sounds like a video game.
It does.
Like everything they do.
Probably because it's all public domain and
yeah.
cheap. You know, honestly.
Well, it wasn't a bad intro.
No, it wasn't. And they're still branded here, even though they are World Championship Wrestling and everything.
Yeah.
They're still using the NWA branding here.
Yep, they're still paying them.
Yep, they continue to do that for a while. So that's the era that we're in. We're in the Jim Herd era, and you're going to hear a lot more about him.
Yes.
Jim Herd, or as Quinn calls him, Pizza Hut guy.
Yeah, Pizza Hut man.
Because he was...
Because wasn't he the CEO of Pizza Hut or
he
something?
He was the CEO of Pizza Hut before he came over to help run WCW.
That seems like a great idea. Get the Pizza Hut guy. It's like they talked to Warlord or something and was like, that's the guy we need.
So we're hosted by Jim Ross against, like, you know those, like, 1980s, like, baby portrait backgrounds? Like, those blue, yeah. slightly textured backgrounds?
Yes.
Those screens?
Yeah, it was very classy, I guess. I mean, very professional. And I was saying, I feel like I'm getting ready to watch Wide World of Sports on ABC.
Why was that?
Just because, like, JR's, like, treating it like a sports. Like, we're about to treat you to some wrestling for a powerful hour, you know?
Hello again, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks very much for being with us here on TBS and the Power Hour. I'm Jim Ross, and I'll be your host for the next 60 minutes. We've got a great program for you.
And then we get our first mention of Jim Herd. Apparently here, Jim Ross has been advising Jim Herd about what the fans want.
JR, the pulse of the people.
Yeah, really. Like, all of a sudden, JR, like, I don't know if they ever revealed that JR had any backstage, you know, influence on the show.
Apparently he does, because
he did
he's
in real life,
he does in the
But the announcer does?
Here,
yeah, that's weird.
He's like our advocate, I guess.
And I've been telling Jim Herd about what the people want. That's how JR sounded in 90.
Jim Herd, Executive Vice President of World Championship Wrestling, has been in conference with the board of directors of WCW for most of this day. I spent a great deal of time with them expressing what I thought the fans wanted someone to say.
It's high school.
In high school.
Yeah.
So anyway, he's trying to push for Jim Ross, the announcer.
Right.
In kayfabe, is trying to push for Sting versus Flair.
Well, isn't that what everybody wants anyway?
Yes.
So he is doing it for the fans.
Self-fulfilling prophecy, though, really. Anyway, it's really amazing, Quinn, to me, how different the WCW JR was compared to the Attitude Era Jim Ross.
He's more about, like, sports. He's more into Gordon Solie, which he does always note as his favorite announcer.
Very much. So. Very classy, very professional, very straight-laced.
Yeah.
No, oh, by God!
Yeah,
you know, none of that
barbecue
stuff.
Barbecue hat and all that. Yeah,
barbecue hat.
Doesn't wear a cowboy hat.
No, definitely
It is
not.
Weird seeing JR with that hat on, too.
Or sometimes. Glasses.
Yeah, no glasses.
It's early, younger JR.
Yeah.
Anyway, so here's what we get. That's our first match. Very weird match.
This is bizarre, considering it's just Power Hour.
Yeah. We get Ric Flair, the champion.
Yeah, what?
Teaming up with Iron Anderson.
Iron Anderson.
Arn Anderson.
Yeah.
Versus Captain Mike Rotunda, the boat version.
Yeah, windbreaker and a hat.
Yeah, like, not the captain of the varsity team.
No, he's captain of a boat.
He has a ship now.
Yeah.
Maybe he should take that ship and sail over to England and
he
watch World
like
of Sport.
A big jobber here,
he
by
did,
the way.
Because he's teaming with some guy named Jerry Price
Who?
That we've never heard of. Now, Sid is accompanying Flair and Iron Anderson here in a very nice suit.
Now, it is a tux. You must note. That's what's even weirder. Is like
Sid in a tux.
Sid in a tux is something I never thought I'd say, and that's something I never thought I'd see.
It is very, very strange.
And I look at this arena and I say, where are they? In a casino?
It looks like where they did Heroes of Wrestling almost.
Yeah, and it's got the advertisement pads on the posts.
Yeah, it's
like,
very cheap looking, you know?
Well, or back then that was considered like high end because like...
Was it?
Yeah, because it was like the era of the big fight with Mike Tyson and stuff like that. So
Atlantic
getting
City
that
style,
boxing look almost was fancy.
Fair. Like, Jerry Price here, this guy that Rotundo is teaming with, looks a lot like Too Cold Scorpio.
Oh, yeah. I thought for a second it was Too Cold Scorpio, like, as soon as I saw him.
It's not, though, right?
Because
Scorpio's real name is Charles Skaggs.
It was not him.
It's not him.
Not him at all.
But anyway, so Flair has very long hair. It's, like, longer than I've seen his hair.
It's super puffy.
It's really long.
Yeah.
It's puffy hair.
Yeah.
He calls out Sting to the camera. Sting, oh, man! get yeah. that stag! You know, yeah. like whatever Flair says. The ring ropes are the WCW colors, the blue, white, and yellow.
I have no problem with this because as long as you're in brand with the ring ropes,
yeah.
it's when you have like stupid colors that I get, like that have nothing to do with anything.
Like purple, yeah, you know, purple, for no reason.
Exactly, that's what I'm thinking of.
So we have not Nick Patrick as the ref. I don't know who it is. Some guy that kind of looks like Nick Patrick, but it's
sort
not.
Of like Randy Anderson, I want to say.
Yeah, but it's also not. I don't know
with
this guy's
puffier
name.
Puffier mustache.
Yeah, fluffier.
Fluffier.
So we get the captain and Iron Anderson to start.
Iron Anderson.
JR, by the way, is by himself on commentary, just for the record.
Well, good. Because, I mean, we could have had Missy Hyatt. I saw something recently with her and him, and she's useless.
Why was Missy Hyatt? Well, it's I get it. Same reason they made Sonny a commentator sometimes.
Right. I mean, Missy Hyatt was considered like a bombshell.
She was like an 80s Sonny.
Yeah, she really was.
You know, she doesn't get enough credit.
Yeah.
When you talk about like the women of wrestling, because everyone's always like, oh, Sonny was the first diva.
But Missy Hyatt was around in like 86 or something. Like really long time.
Really long time.
Yeah.
Eddie and I have been together for a long time, and I was sitting at home, and I got tired of seeing Eddie getting double-teamed, and then we got his nose broke, and I couldn't take it anymore, so that's why I'm back, and I'm going to stand right here beside my man.
Missy Hyatt.
Yeah, Missy Hyatt. Maybe we'll do something on her.
Very interesting. Yeah, Missy Hyatt. Anyway, so Flair and IRS here have a nice sequence, and then we notice, and this wasn't commented on by JR, that Ole Anderson is also at ringside. Yeah. No one acknowledges it.
Yeah, just in like a polo shirt and suspenders, just hanging around.
Real cool guy, Ole. So then Arn here, Iron, DDTs Wall Street on the outside.
That was awesome.
That's like some, you know, Jake Roberts Steamboat style
Flair
stuff.
Flair is just beating the crap out of Scorpio.
Yeah, Scorpio.
Yeah.
And then Arn gets a DDT on Scorpio. It's not really who it is. For the win. So also another thing that was not mentioned, Quinn notices, Barry Windham was on the outside
just
as well.
In his vest, calmly on the outside.
He looked like crap though because he had his hair in the ponytail.
Well, you know, it's he's not wrestling right now, so he's kind of
casual.
He wants his hair out of his face. He's just trying to do his business.
He looks like the Widowmaker version of him though, you know what I mean? From like 89.
The Widowmaker version is almost the same thing.
It is. It's pretty much the same thing.
Yeah.
So anyway, so the Horsemen then all get in the ring. They beat down Jerry Price until this great team, Junkyard Dog, in like a polo shirt.
Yeah, and like
jeans
khakis. Yeah.
Sting, of course, and Orndorff. The Dudes with Attitudes was the name of the stable.
Yeah.
They make the save.
Very weird. Sting as the pink Zubas. And a rat
what
tail.
The hell with those Zubas?
And then I note to you, why would Paul Mini Arm Orndorff be in your stable?
Yeah, like who wants that?
Yeah, it's so like what the hell?
And then we get the segment just ends. Ole's got a stupid suspenders on. Then we get this great segment, which I believe we've reviewed one other time.
Yeah,
the Wrestling Network News,
which is the CNN knockoff.
Basically CNN.
It's basically CNN and like wrestling. Got
combined,
together and they made a news network.
Like even the logo, I think we've mentioned this, but just for the record, even the logo is the CNN logo, but with a W and it's blue instead. So anyway, Gordon Sully hosts the WNN and he's just bitching about the Horsemen.
Yeah, he has such a problem with them.
He says this, they have an obsession with interfering in matches.
Horrible.
I want to show you again about this obsession the Horsemen have with interfering in matches.
Obsession.
Why can't he say that correctly?
I don't
it's
know.
Obsession, not it's obsession.
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 So then we cut to the Clash of the Champions from about a week ago, and it's subtitled, by the way.
I was going to say.
Coastal Crush.
That should have went on worst pay-per-view names right there, but it wasn't a pay-per-view, I guess
that's
doesn't
almost
count.
Bryan Adams' gimmick. Coastal Crush.
Was it?
Kona Crush.
Oh, yes. Kona Crush. Okay, yeah.
So
that
anyway,
Bryan Adams.
Bryan Adams.
Yeah.
So we get a clip of Luger in very, very pink tights. He gets beat down before the match by the Horsemen, but he still somehow pins Sid with a clothesline.
Yeah, that was weird. He just like freaking like boom, done. I'm out of here. Leaves.
And he calmly walked away.
Yeah, he just leaves. He's like he's just like clapping his way out there.
Like nothing ever happened. Yeah. It's like the four Horsemen try to beat him down. I'm just trying to visualize this for the folks, right?
He just kind of slips out of
there.
He's
like, nope, and he clotheslines. Sid pins him while Ole's like still in the ring and then he just leaves.
Yeah, he just gets out of there.
It's kind of cool. So then we get back to Gordon here.
Yep.
He also brings up Jim Herd.
This Jim Herd meeting is so important.
Jim Herd is like all over this show in name only.
I have had an opportunity to meet with Mr. Jim Herd and the NWA Board of Directors during this past week.
By the way, how did they get Gordon Solie to sign up for this crap? Like, this seems like so below him. Like,
I don't know.
Like, why isn't he just commentating with JR? Like, why is he in the in the CNN center, the wrestling version, in the wrestling division?
The wrestling division of CNN. That's pretty much what WCW was.
Yeah, basically.
If you really think about it.
Well, of Turner, because there was a lot. There was the Captain Planet division and
shut up.
The Cartoon Network
and the
division.
Atlanta Braves division.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the Great American Bash is coming up. We get a promo for it. It's July 7th.
Yep.
So then they run down.
This is great.
Like a scroll of literally every cable company by state.
But this is my favorite part.
That you can find this on.
So they're doing this, right?
Yep.
And it's like 2 minutes. Like, it's really long, and they can't even finish it, and they just cut it off at M.
It's like, true.
Yeah.
It just stops at M, and then...
And I had mentioned to you that, like, they're probably going to have to, like, come back to this, right?
Right.
And stay tuned. We'll find out.
Exactly. We come back to JR. He welcomes us back. He mentions that they're going to be in Tennessee tomorrow, Quinn.
Woo. Yeah.
We take a look at the U.S. champ, Lex Luger, again.
Yep.
He is heading into a match coming up at the Bash, Quinn, against Mean Mark Callis. More on him later.
Yeah, The Undertaker.
That's right, The Undertaker. But first of all, Lex Luger versus Barry Horowitz?
Was he for here for like a second, Joe? Like,
I don't remember this.
And why does he have a gimmick? Like, he actually has the jacket with the, like, hand on his back thing. Like, yeah, pat on the back.
Same pink tights for Luger.
Yeah.
There's this clean-cut ref that I don't recognize. It turns out it was Nick Patrick.
Yeah, no mustache.
And short hair.
Short hair, yeah.
No mullety hair.
So this whole time you've been looking for Nick Patrick. And
he was right there.
He's right under your nose.
I love Nick Patrick, one of my favorite refs. Anyway, Luger has very fluffy. Speaking of hair, because, you know, Flair had long, fluffy hair. Luger's hair is very fluffy and long as well.
I like this Luger only because he reminds me of the Happy Nitro version that beat Hogan. So, like, I was fine with this Lex Luger.
It is very, very similar
to
the 96-97 Lex Luger.
It's not the, like, American hero Lex Luger.
It's
any
not
of that
the
crap.
America's crumbling
America's
Lex Luger.
Crumble link Lex Luger.
America's crumbling.
America is crumbling.
Someone get us a shirt that says America's crumbling.
But spelled out crumbling.
Crumbling. Yeah.
That should be one of the things we sell on OVT.com or whatever our thing
shit,
is.
Oh, shit. You're right.
America's crumbling. Or we could just put, like, bricks breaking, like pollution or something. Yeah.
Anyway, as the match starts here, the Horsemen continue their obsession with interfering.
Yeah, a big obsession.
And then JR calls Ole Anderson the godfather of the Horsemen.
Yeah, more like the lazy uncle of the Four Horsemen. He was never, like, the leader.
No.
Or they didn't look to him. He sucked so bad they kicked him out because he, like, wanted to go to his kid's softball game or something. You remember that?
Yeah.
Like, Flair on that, like, Horsemen DVD, like, bitches and moans about, hey, he wasn't in it. I don't like him. Like,
no
blah,
one liked
blah, blah.
Ole
yeah.
Anderson, and Ole Anderson doesn't like anybody.
Yeah, he's terrible.
He's actually a very curmudgeon-y. He, like,
no,
he
everyone,
does not
he,
seem like a nice guy.
No, he has a history. Nobody wanted to work with him, and that's kind of why he got kicked out of the business. He kept going up the ladder, and once he made it to the top, like, after that point, nobody wanted to work with him anymore,
right.
So who the hell was going to hire him?
And he may very well have been, this is June of 90, so I don't remember, he may very well have been booking or being involved with booking at this time. I know there was a handoff from Flair to him at some point.
Which was the beginning of the end for him as anything
as
in wrestling.
As anything in wrestling, yeah, really. In the midst of this obsession, Sting wanders out. And then Arn, you know, to Quinn, has a very puffy workout sweatshirt on.
He doesn't give a shit. This is the Arn I like when he's like, he has like a giant sweatshirt. I think Tully had the giant sweatshirt once. But,
yeah,
but
I love
you know,
it.
When he's like done doing stuff for the night and he's just like, I put my hat on that doesn't, he doesn't bring it down all the way. You know how I don't
one
like
one of your pet peeves. Yeah.
And then he has the sweatshirt. Sometimes he has sweatpants on too.
Sometimes he does. Yeah. So he's in that mode right now.
Mm-hmm.
In the meantime, Luger press slams and then power slams and then torture axe Horowitz for the win. Then JYD and Baby Arm run out again.
Yeah.
Is that like all this show is?
It's
is
been
the
like
Horsemen versus them?
Like half the show has been just this feud.
Sting with his stupid pink pants.
Mm-hmm. Zubas. Pink Zubas.
That's right. Then we get a very serious promo from Sting about Ric Flair. Remember
and
that?
He acknowledges. He says, I'm going to tone it down a bit here.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep it down a little bit.
a little bit on the opposite end of what the Stinger is all about, because I want everybody to understand this, and I want you to understand it too, Ric Flair.
But he does say walk the aisle like seven times.
Because Ric Flair says that, I guess.
I know, but he really said it way too many times.
You've asked me to walk the aisle I don't know how many times, and I've walked it every single time. You've asked me to walk the aisle again, I'm going to walk it. Maybe I asked you this time to walk the aisle, and I'm going to walk the aisle.
So I bring this up to you. I say, so is Sting the, like, sane version of the Ultimate Warrior at this point? Like, it's just, like, a rational version of the Ultimate Warrior?
I always thought, not that Sting was an answer to the Ultimate Warrior, because he wasn't. He was Sting before the
war. He was just
around
Sting.
The same time.
Yeah.
And they were obviously the Blade Runners. They were tag partners
right. And then
in
they
Mid-South.
Were split up, and they both made it to the top.
Yep, in separate promotions.
Mm-hmm.
But I always thought they were somewhat analogous because they had very similar face paint.
Yeah.
They were bigger guys. I mean, obviously the Warrior was very steroidy. Sting was a bigger guy.
Yeah, he was taller, though, I think.
Yeah, but he wasn't steroidy the way Warrior was. But they were very popular with the kids.
Yeah.
They were a big deal. You know,
Sting
they had titles.
Sting was more clean cut, and the Ultimate Warrior was rougher around the edges. And
yep.
I mean that even in character. Like,
yeah,
the Warrior was kind of like, I'll beat up anybody. Yeah, I'm crazy.
Yeah, Sting was more refined.
Yeah, Sting was. Yeah.
But they were somewhat
a cut above the rest.
They were somewhat, you know, I would say a parallel.
Yeah.
But anyway, then Mean Mark Callis with Paul Heyman.
Okay, so this is weird because it's the Undertaker managed by the guy who would manage the guy that beat him at WrestleMania for the first time.
Can you repeat that, please? What was that? The Undertaker managed by the guy that would manage the guy that beat him at WrestleMania.
Which ended the streak. Isn't that ironic?
Don't you think?
Yeah.
It's like 10,000 spoons when all you need is a knife.
I know.
You better stop.
So I get where you're going, too.
He's fighting a jagged little pill named Dennis Fowler, some geek.
Yeah.
And Scott Keith would say...
Yeah, big geek.
British Bulldog squashing a couple of geeks. And, you know, Haku squashing some geek.
Big geek here. But you know what's cool about Mark Callis here? You know, Mark Calloway, the Undertaker. But in this character... First of all, to set the visual for you, he kind of comes to the ring dressed like a blackjack, vest and everything.
He's got a vest,
a loaded glove.
A speedo. He has no pants on.
No shirt on.
He's
getting very erotic.
The glove.
Yeah.
The glove is the big deal.
Glove. And he's got very short hair.
Yeah.
And he gets in there. He storms the ring.
Yep.
Because, you know, we're used to, and you can't blame us, because he's been the Undertaker for like almost 30 years.
Him coming and taking 5 years.
Right. We're used to the Undertaker in any era.
Right.
Working like the Undertaker, just very slow, methodical, die type of thing.
He's kind of fast-paced here.
He storms the ring. He's like kind of like Stan Hansen.
Right.
Just like storms in there, throwing the guy around.
Mm-hmm.
Drop kicks. Selling?
Side slam, and he's doing like... He does that weird thing off the top rope.
Yeah, this was interesting. It was like the old school, but rather than hold the opponent's arm in an arm wringer while he walked the ropes, the guy was on his back.
Yeah.
He went up, walked the ropes like halfway, did a big elbow drop for the pin, but this was weird, remember?
Yeah, this was very weird.
He pulled him up at two, but Nick Patrick counted three anyway.
Right.
But I think Nick Patrick fucked up.
Yeah.
Because Mark then... lays him out with a heart punch.
Yeah, what we thought would be his move because he has a glove. Like, isn't that funny that we assumed that, like, it was a heart punch, which is the worst move ever. But
a horrible finisher.
Yeah.
And then he pins him again. So I think Nick Patrick fucked up and they just redid the finish.
Yeah.
And you said he looks so much better than Luger.
Yeah, so they're hyping that Luger's going to fight him. And I'm like, how can Luger beat this guy? And you told me, I've never seen this Clash of the Champions this happened.
No, Great American Bash.
Great American Bash. But you said that,
Luger killed him. Yeah,
Luger
he won.
Just killed him. Like, that seems dumb to me.
Sorry.
He seems so much better than Lex Luger.
Yeah, but Quinn, 5 months later, he'd be debuting as The Undertaker, so I think it worked out.
I guess it did, but I mean...
What do you want him to do? Be the WCW World
this
Champion?
This exemplifies how WCW dropped the ball. They had The Undertaker. The Undertaker.
But they didn't know that yet.
But this guy could have been successful at anything. You could tell here that he's something.
You know what? You really can. For all the shit that The Undertaker has gotten over the years as a worker, a lot of that is because of his character that he played.
Right, but I think he would have been successful either way.
That's
here
what I
because
mean.
Because he's awesome.
That's what I'm saying. The shit he got of not selling, well, his character didn't feel pain.
He was an undead zombie.
And he couldn't work a fast-paced style because, again, his character was an undead zombie.
Right.
So why would he?
Yeah.
But you could see that this guy... could, and he's young here, he's like 25 here,
he's very young,
he could work.
Oh yeah,
he did grasp how to do wrestling.
Yeah, and he looked convincing.
It's not like he lucked in. He stepped in some good shit by becoming the Undertaker and taking it as far as he did, but it's not like he was just like this random worker. He made the Undertaker character work because he was talented.
Correct, and it's
evident
here.
I think we agree there. Yeah. So I gained a little bit more respect now for the Undertaker.
Oh, did you?
I did, seeing him as, again, I do like the Undertaker.
Yeah.
I do.
You wouldn't know by hearing you talk about him, but...
My biggest gripe has always been the streak more than anything, not the Undertaker himself. Anyhow, we digress here. Let's go to Jim Cornette.
Really?
What? Interviewing...
What?
Yeah. Arn, Ole, and Barry.
And he goes, motherfucker, you suck.
Yeah, I hate Vince Russo, motherfucker.
Yeah, always.
Jim Cornette.
Jim Cornette, go back to Kentucky or Tennessee or wherever you're from.
Arn has regular black and white Zubas, very classy Zubas, I've noticed.
Yeah, the classy Zubas.
It's that mode you said, right? Like, yeah. Where he just doesn't give a shit. Like, right. He's wearing like a t-shirt and
That's
Zubas.
What I like about him. And his sunglasses, glasses.
He's a carrot ball.
Those glasses are awesome.
So, of course, he doesn't get to talk. Ole does. Ole rambles. He calls Sting's faction the Super Dudes.
Yeah, it's the dudes with attitudes, but he keeps calling them the Super Dudes. How does Ole not know what this is? Why the fuck is he here? Like, why the hell? Like, seriously.
He doesn't even know what's going on.
Yeah.
He keeps calling them the Super Dudes.
Like, multiple times.
It's not even their name.
He even does this stupid snafu, and he calls Ric Flair Rick Nature Boy Flair.
Whoever
called him that, ever,
no
Joe?
No one.
Ever.
Rick Nature Boy Flair. Yeah. But the funny thing is we thought, like, did Flair not even want to show up for this promo?
Ugh.
But then Cornette's like, no, let's bring Flair in here, motherfucker.
Yeah.
So Flair comes in, and at first he's doing that calm version of his promos where he's like, first of all, you know, like that thing.
But that's Ric Flair's deal. He ramps it up.
Let's put this down in the record books.
And then he does the loud version where he's like, and he says his shoes cost $1,000 a pair.
He takes the shoe off and shows
it. He holds it up.
But he makes a good point here. He says, Sting, are you ready to step into these shoes?
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, like, are you ready to hit the big time? And I thought that was kind of cool, is that he took it back to the shoes more than your house thing, but he made a point that I'm wearing these shoes because I'm a big deal.
Right.
And no, that, are you ready to step into these shoes?
Very, very good promo.
Yeah.
Of course, by Ric Flair, who was wearing a very nice tan-colored suit.
Excellent.
So Cornette wraps that up, and then we get a really, really great match here. The Southern Boys versus the Freebirds.
So, wait a second. Aren't the Freebirds more Southern than anybody?
Like, you would think, because the Southern Boys come to the ring with their fucking Confederate flag tights and all this shit, you know. But wasn't that one of the Freebirds' hallmarks?
Yeah, the Confederate flag, they wore it. Like, they literally wore the flag.
So, this is the most WCW match I can think of. It's fucking promotion in Atlanta, owned by Ted Turner.
Well, you got to throw this stuff out for your base, right? I mean, this is what they're here to see, man.
Right. Hosted by Jim Ross, with Gordon Solie appearing.
Yeah.
And it's the Freebirds versus the Southern Boys.
While we're like cringing, they're probably like, hell yeah, like,
yeah, go get him there. Yeah.
Well, you know, everyone likes what they like, right? And WCW, this is their audience. I don't begrudge them for this.
Quinn, it doesn't make it good though to like stuff, you know?
Oh,
what I
yeah.
mean
no
anyway Michael Hayes, my favorite, you know how much I love him. He's got eyeliner on.
Yeah.
Because weren't you trying to explain to me while you were watching this that they were like the glam metal version?
They're the glam metal version. It's like they saw Guns N' Roses and they were like, we need to make the Freebirds like this now. Yeah.
Or like Bon Jovi or something. Jimmy Garvin has ultra huge Jimmy Garvin hair, you know, the usual.
And you know what? I find it weird that Jimmy Garvin was in this thing. And I know he was in the Freebirds, but it's like I was explaining to you how, like, I felt Jimmy Garvin was equivalent to Tully Blanchard previous to all this.
I guess so, but I feel like Jimmy Garvin had his place in time, and it was not 1990 to matter anymore.
I guess. I don't know. It's just a defense of Jimmy Garvin. It's just I felt that he was always resorted to Michael Hayes' goon.
True.
After a certain point, and like I thought that was like a real betrayal of the character of Jimmy Garvin. That's
I guess.
All.
You did say to me, wasn't Michael Hayes the inventor of music or something?
Yeah. Well, he claims that he invented coming in the ring with music, although I swear Sergeant Slaughter did it first with the Marine
Gorgeous
Corps.
George
him.
Did it way before that.
Besides that.
Yeah, Slaughter did it, but also, again, Gorgeous George did it first.
Right, so I guess it's Gorgeous George officially.
Lincoln did it first, actually.
Did he? Did he have a whole band?
Yeah, yeah, this is the Civil War freaking army band played.
Playing drums.
Yeah, just playing drum music. Anyway, by the way, the Southern Boys are Tracy Smothers and Steve Armstrong.
And Tracy Smothers is shit.
Don't tell Cornette that.
Listen, he never was anything. Like, no. Ever. Like
in Smoky Mountain, he was
Freddie Joe Floyd.
No, he was a big deal in Smoky Mountain. That great promotion.
That doesn't make you anything.
It's a really good promotion.
It's Quib. Not anything good.
You know what? We need to review Smoky Mountain at
don't
some point.
Don't worry, eventually.
Marty Howell's going to hate us.
I'm just putting it off because
I don't want to watch it either.
I don't want to get mad.
I don't want to watch it.
We're talking about Tracy Smothers being a main eventer or something. What? Who would do that?
But Tony Anthony's in it, too. Dirty white boy.
The toilet man.
Yeah, toilet man. Mm-hmm. So anyway, this is a decent match. Quinn, you called it like a non-jobber TV match.
I thought it was like the feature contest. Like
I thought it was, too. It turns out it's not.
It's not, but it was two real teams fighting each other, so.
True. And I'll tell you this, JR is not Gordon Solie working by himself. He's
no.
Okay.
Yeah,
but nobody could do it like Gordon.
I will say this, at least there's no obsessions in this match. There's no interference. Well, actually there is, but it's not that type of interference.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
We get a hot Southern tag to Tracy Smothers.
Yes, we do.
And, you know, the usual fiery baby face offense, shoulder tackles, all that crap. Then Jim Cornette wanders out to help the Freebirds.
Hey, motherfucker. Yeah, like, basically trips up Tracy or
Basie. Well, it doesn't matter.
Lacey, I don't know.
Lacey Smothers.
One of them.
Basically, Cornette wandered out because the Southern Boys are fighting the Midnight Express at the Great American Bash, so Cornette's screwing with them, basically. That's why he's here. Garvin gets the pin on an O'Connor roll. And then
what the hell is O'Connor roll?
It's like the reverse like roll-up where you grab them from behind and flip over, and then you roll them up.
Never heard of it. Never heard of it called that, I guess.
I just felt like calling it that. I usually wouldn't.
Look at you. Well, Dave Meltzer over here.
Yeah, match, you know, 6 5/8.
Yeah.
Anyway, promo with Hall of Famer Teddy Long and... Yeah. Doom.
And Hall of Famer Ron Simmons. And not Hall of Famer Butch Reed. Yeah.
Hey, yeah, that's not fair, really.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, if we're going to put Coco Beware in and shit like that and Rikishi.
Well, Butch Reed beat Coco Beware at Hustlemania.
Right. He did beat him at Hustlemania.
Yeah.
Three.
Yeah. At three, no
at
less.
At three.
Yeah. So there you
go. Yeah. Butch Reed for Hall of Fame.
Hell yeah.
Hacksaw Butch Reed, by the way, from Mid-South.
Correct.
Great feud with Jim Duggan and great team with Jim Duggan. Anyway. Let's get to this Doom promo.
Yep.
Teddy Long also mentions Jim Herd.
What? Why is this such a big deal, this thing? It's like, oh, they're having meetings and stuff.
Was this like one of Jim Herd's criteria for owning the company or whatever
they
he did?
They have to mention him and his Pizza Hut face on TV all the time. I'm surprised they didn't have to mention Pizza Hut at all.
I know, right? So anyway, the Doom has the best version, according to Quinn, of the NWA tag titles.
It is the best version.
It is, right?
Yeah, totally. Like, I thought that was such a good version, and I was glad that they kept them, like, till, like, TNA had those belts.
Yeah, they were good belts.
Yeah.
Butch Reed says that Doom is the team of the 90s.
Well, that didn't last much longer.
Until, like, 91?
Yeah.
Maybe.
I guess that's technically the 90s, but...
Yeah, but still.
Somehow, I would say, like, if I was to say a team of the 90s, New Age Outlaws would be, like, on the top of my list, because that's who I think... They're very 90s. Like,
Steiner Brothers? Not even?
No, not even.
You don't like them, though.
No, I don't think they're as good as...
People say.
Just, yeah, we can get into that in another discussion.
Will. Anyway, Farouk looks the same age as ever.
Like, I like that you call him Farouk.
Yeah, Farouk. Not any younger than 2004 or anything. Like, he doesn't look like younger than now.
I don't like that he doesn't talk in this promo.
Yeah,
he's such a good talker.
That's a weird thing. We get Teddy Long talking, and he's fine. Butch Reed, he was okay. But Ron Simmons is the best talker out of all three of these guys.
He is. Maybe he was still new here, and he just didn't have his talking together
Maybe he didn't have his talking together, true. So our next match here, our final match, our feature match, I guess, is the Rock and Roll Express. Ugh, I don't like them, for the record.
And the Rock and Rolls?
Yeah, and I'm sure Marty Howell's going to bitch at me for that, but I don't like them, because I don't have no attachment to them.
I've seen some stuff. I mean, I like Ricky Morton's feud with Ric Flair. I've said this before.
And Robert Gibson always kept an eye on things.
Yeah, always.
Always had an eye on things.
So they're fighting the Mod Squad. Who the fuck is this?
Spike and Basher.
What? It sounds like a Demolition ripoff dressed like the Powers of Pain. So basically.
And Legion of Doom, too. Yeah. It was like a mashup of all that crap.
Like the Road Warriors, like fourth cousins
here. I guess
here.
So. I feel like the Rock and Rolls are already past their prime here. Like, that, they already look old and tired and boring. And, like, why is this? Why are they here?
I know. No, I totally agree with you.
And this match sucks, too.
It does.
This guy that they're fighting in the Mod Squad, he's like a big fat piece of shit.
Yeah, who is it? Mod or Squad?
Mod or Squad. I don't remember their name. What was it? Spike and Basher?
Yeah, Spike and Basher.
Might as well have been called Mod and Squad.
I know. Why are they called the Mod Squad? Why does this team exist? Yeah. Who are they? If you know who they are, let us know.
Mod and Squad.
Robert Gibson plays Ricky Morton. What I mean by that, I'll explain that in case we have any people that don't, you know, aren't fully acquainted with some of the smart, you know, terminology that we've happened to pick up over the years. But basically, to play Ricky Morton in a tag team match like this means, you know, in your standard formula tag team, one of the faces will get beat down for a few minutes.
Right.
Maybe five, maybe three, you know, depending on the match.
Right.
Maybe seven.
Yeah.
The heels will just dominate him. There'll be some false tags. He'll try to tag in, but it won't happen.
Right.
That's generally called the Ricky Morton, is the face getting beat down.
Because Ricky Morton would always be the victim, and he would tag into Robert Gibson.
They popularized that style of tag match.
But this is the reverse.
Robert Gibson is playing the Ricky Morton role.
And I say to you, what are they, bored?
Yeah, what are they, like, just changing shit up?
That's weird.
It is really weird.
And by the way, there's a side headlock here by Spike or Mod or Squad or Bash or whatever the hell their name is. And it's like the worst chin lock I've ever seen.
Yeah,
like, his arm is like, he's got the one arm under the neck or whatever, but like the other one is like above his head or something.
It looked terrible.
How do you mess that up?
Like he didn't know how to do it.
It's terrible.
And the power plant wasn't around yet, you know, so Sergeant Buddy Lee Parker wasn't teaching
these
people these holds.
These guys would have never made it to the power plant.
You don't think? You think like high voltage would have been...
they're utter junk, Joe. Just get them out of here.
I'm not going to disagree. Yeah. I do know that Basher then comes in and puts his own shitty headlock on.
Not as shitty.
Not as shitty. Gibson finally gets the hot tag, which is weird, to Ricky Morton.
Yeah.
As, like, only 34 girls cheer and nobody else.
There's less girls that are into Ricky Morton at this point in time.
They're like, oh, it's Uncle Rick.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Creepy looking. Anyway, he gets the pin with a crappy cross body block like this is 1981. Like, he's Tony Gurria or something.
This is just bad.
The other
match with the Southern Boys and the Freebird should have been last.
Yeah, and the Mod Squad's really sucked.
Yeah, especially if you're doing, like, a feature contest thing like that.
Well, here's the thing, Quinn, right? If you're going to do a tag match like this,
mm-hmm.
where it's the faces versus the heels, and the faces are going to win, the heel team carries most of the offense. They better be interesting.
They sucked.
Exactly.
You can't have these. Well, that's the problem with the Rock and Rolls. You can't put them in jobber matches.
Right. You have to have them against someone like the Midnights that can do creative offense, where it gets the crowd riled up because of the cheating, because of the high flying moves.
When you got a team that their entire deal is that they get beat up the whole time, it plays into how I always say that the jobbers should never get like more than like a punch on offense ever.
If
your whole thing is based around that, then you can't fight jobbers.
Yeah. Like literally, they did a standard tag team formula match against who the fuck is the Mod Squad?
Yeah, you know Mod and Squad.
Yeah, exactly. Mod and Squad. So anyway, that was a very bad match. But guess what, Quinn? We get more cable listings starting at M.
Finally. At least we'll know. At least we'll know.
At least we'll know.
That we can't get it in our area because it wasn't on the New Jersey listing.
No, it wasn't. The closest was Newark.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'll say this. The music they had playing during that scroll was really good.
Yeah, it was excellent.
I'll probably dub it in. We're probably talking over it right now. Now, why wouldn't they just make these like inserts region-based? You know, like the local insertion, the way Vince did?
Well, because they're cheap. They have all the money in the world, and they don't want to edit down their product. They just want to throw this out there. I'm sure these matches were just filmed at some house show, and they had extra lights and some cameras, but it looked just like a house show.
Right, because you would think they have all these syndicated shows, right? I know this is on TBS, I get that, but they have all these other syndicated shows.
Mm-hmm.
Just do local insertion the way Vince would do at the event center.
Had a fraction of the money that they had, and he put so much more effort into the product and made it look polished and just better.
Right.
In that sense.
I totally agree with you. And I think that was one of the things that distinguished Vince from everyone else, including WCW.
Especially in 1990. 1990 is kind of the apex of Vince's, like, polish.
Yeah, and it's the end of the golden era, as we said, right? Where it starts.
Well, the polish starts to come off because Vince starts running out of money or whatever, so.
Yeah, and steroids and
stuff. And WBF,
like that.
He has to spend it all on that, too.
Anyway, to close out the show, we get JR hyping the Great American Bash, etc., and then again he mentions his fucking meeting with Jim Herd.
Enough with the Jim Herd.
And then he plugs the Ross Report that was around in 90?
Yeah.
What?
Weird.
The hotline?
Bizarre. So fade to black, and I feel more powerful after watching that powerful hour of wrestling.
I'm very, very powerful now. Mark Riley, thank you for nothing. No, I'm just kidding. Was okay.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't bad. I don't want it to sound like we thought it was crap or anything.
It wasn't great.
It was just, you know, it was standard fare. It wasn't the worst. It wasn't the best. It was just kind of there.
It was a slice of WCW.
And I honestly don't even mean that in a bad way, because we review so much junk. Like, this was actually, like, not bad.
Better than Superstars from 94?
Oh, so much better. I was going to say to you that, like, it feels like things are happening, regardless of the, you know, a little too much talky about the Jim Herd stuff, at least stuff is happening.
Right, at least stuff's happening. At least they have a fairly compelling program with some top stars, you know, Luger, Flair, Sting.
Yeah. If you're watching, you might want to see what is going to happen with this Jim Herd meeting. Like, what is that going to, what's going to happen because of that? Right,
exactly. Absolutely right.
So story is advancing.
And again, we got to put this in perspective here. This was not one of their top-tier shows.
Yeah, but, I mean, you got stuff like Jim Cornette with the Southern Boys. And,
and JR's there to give it some levity, right? Yeah, JR's there to give it some credibility.
And the Horsemen feuding with the dudes and all this. There's things.
So it was fine. It was very powerful.
Yeah, very powerful hour. Powerful television.
I had never watched this show in any form before, so I'm happy to have done that.
Yeah, and we got to see The Undertaker.
Got to see The Undertaker. That was interesting.
Yeah.
Mean Mark, you know, himself.
Mean Marky.
Mean Marky. So overall, not bad.
Yeah.
Right?
Not bad.
Doesn't touch World of Sport from last week, obviously.
Yeah, World of Sport was great.
But, you know, not everything can be a winner. Yeah. But speaking of winners, folks, we want to continue to win your hearts.
Yes.
So send us your requests. Send us things you want us to talk about. Send us your Mount Rushmore and Death Valley. We are here for you. It's all about the fans, Quinn.
Yeah, all about the fans over here at OVP.
That's right. So in the meantime, check us out on Twitter at OVP Podcast. You can tweet at us. You can email us at OVPPodcast@gmail.com. And, of course, go to our Facebook group.
Yeah.
Our
go
vantage
over there.
Point. Yeah, we would love to talk to you. We got a bunch of guys there talking about various stuff, sometimes busting our balls. It's a lot of fun.
Always busting.
Doing stuff just to annoy us. You know,
busting makes them feel good.
Until next time, folks, have a great rest of your day. Have a great rest of your week. Hopefully you have a long weekend next week with 4th of July coming up.
Oh, yeah.
That'll be nice. I do. I have 2 days off, 3rd and the 4th, so I'll be ready to podcast away.
I'll have to see Lex Luger.
Until next time, folks, have a great day. We will see you.
See ya.
Is it going to be Arn against Sting? Who's it going to be? What's the combination? Six
you ought to join those super dudes. You're just like them. You talk a little bit too much and don't say much of anything. I tell you what, we're going to reveal our plans right here on TV. Huh. Why don't you go find out what the Braves are going to do tomorrow? Or why don't you find out what the football teams are going to do ahead of time? Well, we're not going to tell anybody, but we're going to tell you this. Super dudes, whatever combination you got, we're going to be ready for you. I don't care who you put out there. If you're going to put out the Steiners, you're going to put out Lex Luger and Sting. Sting by himself. In fact, that would be a pretty good idea right there. Sting is the guy now carrying that torch, carrying the banner for the Super Dudes. He's the organizer of this great outfit. Everybody wearing white hats, white clothes, and riding in on white horses. Well, I'll tell you what. You're looking at the best there is in professional wrestling right today. I'm talking about the Horsemen. I'm talking about Anderson. I'm talking about Wyndham. I'm talking about Sid Vicious. And I'm talking about the man that's going to be world's heavyweight champion forever. Forever. Rick Nature Boy.
Will you stop?